PSNY.
There we go. Hey, Nick, how's it going?
How's it going?
Oh, it's great. Hold on one sec. We can't sneak up on our guests anymore. Now that,
they know
Zoom
every
tells
time
us.
We start recording.
Oh. Zoom probably had some issues with that because I don't feel like it was always like that.
No, it wasn't. And I'm going to tell this story for like the billionth time, but one of our favorite interviews was with Keith McPherson. And the second time or the third time we interviewed him, we had pressed record like right away. And he was just talking and talking for like 10 minutes. And we're like, wow, like this is really great. Like this is a good podcast so far. And he's like, yeah. So, you know, if you guys want to like work that in the conversation somehow, when we start, like we can, you know, figure out a way to get there. I'm like, whoa, Keith, we've been recording this entire time, man. And he didn't realize because it doesn't give you the notification. And now it's like, we don't get to have those nice like pre-recording conversations that we're having when we're talking about one of Allison's coworkers thinking that in upstate New York he's gonna get off for snow. Come on.
Yeah, he legitimately told me, he's like, I thought we're working from home tomorrow, and I just stared at him and I'm like, no, when have we ever worked from home during a snowstorm? I don't doesn't make sense.
Oh man, that's funny. So how you guys doing?
Good, oh, good.
We are fantastic. Yeah, welcome aboard. This is episode 125 of the Bleacher Creatures Yankees podcast presented by Elite Sports New York, Crossing Broad, Warwick Gaming, XL Media, and as always, Rivercrest NYC. Nick, if you're ever in Astoria, you have to check out Rivercrest. My cousin Kira will hook you up. We got Nick Tyrell on the podcast, one of our favorites from Yankees Twitter and a legend for the Yes Network.
Actually, let me just stop you right there. Do not work for the Yes Network.
Oh,
but,
for the Yankees specifically.
But
yes.
But I have not some guy help us out too. We work together, but you know, different umbrella.
Yeah. So that's a perfect place to start. What exactly is it that you do, Nick? Because I know you are very active on Twitter and you have access to all these great stories for the Yankees, but I still don't know the exact parameters of your job.
Yeah, so really my job is one of the cool things about my job is that it kind of tends to change based off of what happens throughout the year. Luckily, since I've been, you know, in a more senior position, we've always been kind of like right there. So we've been in like the same type of way, you know what I mean? Like we're always there at the end. We always have a story to tell. Mm-hmm. At the beginning of the season, there's always, you know, there's always expectations, there's all this good stuff, but otherwise, like, other than that, like, it depends if we're having, like, people's jerseys getting retired, if we're going to have people retiring. That actually was the first, like, some of the first things that I ever did was, like, when we got Posada's number retired, Pettit's, Bernie's, like, I got, like, a nice slate to start my editorial career. But these days, I mean, I'll get into work and do a lot of updating. We're always trying to keep our stuff fresh, doing a lot of footage gathering during the season. Really just, you know, trying to think of ideas, trying to draw inspiration from other people or whatever. But like my typical work day is always just not very typical.
That I love that. I've never been.
That makes sense.
Yeah, I've never been the 9-to-5 type. I like to do different things every day, which of course I do have a 9-to-5 right now, which drives me a little bit crazy. But yeah, I mean, it's exciting. And you know, you get to spend a lot of time with the actual players and obviously with the Yankees organization, you got some legends. And I know you're working on something for Paul O'Neill right now for his jersey getting retired.
Mm-hmm. Yep. We just dropped it. It's actually a funny story right off the bat. Like on Friday, I was working on something. Don't know how in depth I can go into on that because it still hasn't been released yet. But I was working on something, and I got a call from my boss, and he was like, hey, I was just wondering if you could, like, you know, cut something together for Paul O'Neill. It'd be like, you know, 30 to 45 seconds, but it's not, you know, don't have to go too crazy on it, but you know, we're going to have it done. And I was like, all right. So I got things together, got the music cut, whatever, but I wasn't taking super seriously. You know what I mean? I didn't ask what it was for or whatever. It was just kind of, you know, keeping it a little laid back. And then I get in on Monday and I was like, all right, I'm just going to finish this thing. And the social media manager came over to me and we were just chopping it up. And he was like, oh, so how's that coming? I was like, oh, you know, it's still a little rough. Like, if you want to just take a look at it, he's like, oh, this is pretty good, but like, you're gonna finish it today, right? And I was like, yeah. I was like, what is this for? He was like, I can't really say. And I was like, oh, they're retiring his number. this was like 11:30 in the morning, and I was like, oh my god, like, I need to change gears. I need to take this, you know, much more seriously than I was. And I basically just like hunkered down, sat down, and basically just sat in front of my screen for like the next 6 hours, barely taking a break or whatever, and ended up putting that, you know, the announcement video together, and that released yesterday or 2 days ago, and I was pretty stoked about it, because you never know. Like, I went a stretch where I did Jeter's number retirement tribute, Pettit, Posada, Bernie, like I said, I did A-Rod's retirement video, Teixeira's retirement video, Yogi when he passed away, I did his memorial. So that was like a lot in a little bit of time. So I was thinking to myself, like, well, almost seems like I'm gonna be doing one of these like every year. And then it kind of like, then it goes in waves. So then that stopped happening. And then it's like, well, shit, when are we ever gonna retire anybody's number? Like, we haven't done Paul yet. Are we gonna do him ever? You know what I mean? So you get an assignment like that and you're like, well, shit, you don't know when the next time you're going to do something like this is. So I made sure that I didn't skimp on it.
Oh yeah. You got to make it special, even just for the Yankees fans. And especially for Paul O'Neill, who's, I'm sure, a big part of the organization just outside his broadcasting role too. So I'm sure you've interacted with him a lot. So I can imagine you might want to take it up a notch from just like, I don't know, I'm doing a Paul O'Neill like tribute video or something, to like, oh, yep, wow, like, this is a really special occasion and like super important. I got to go all out on this.
Oh yeah, for sure. And now that's the thing though, in the off season, you don't know. Sorry. I didn't mean to cut
you. No, you're okay.
You don't know in the off season. Like, so I'll be doing a range of things from like fantasy camp videos to, you know, somebody's going to go speak for people and they want like a 30 second intro or whatever. Like, it's a very wide range, so you really never know.
So my question for you is, you know, when you go to Yankee Stadium and you see the videos on the video board, do you do some of those, is that right?
Oh yeah.
Like, oh yeah, those are fun ones. I enjoy
those are my favorite. Those are the hype videos. I walked into a place yesterday, I actually just met Kyle Condor. I just met him in person yesterday, and we were talking, and my man Justin Shackle just walked in, and they were talking, and they were like, oh, you know Nick Tyrelli, he's hype personified or whatever. Like, that's a new one. But yeah, I really enjoy doing like the hype videos, trying to make things like intimidating, show like a side of the team that's, you know, supposed to be like as badass as possible. But yeah, those are my favorite.
I got to tell you, I wait for, especially for like the postseason, the hype videos and like the beginning of the season. Those are my favorite. Like, they just, they hit hard. So I don't know whether it's just the music, the combination of the clips and stuff like that, but something I definitely look forward to every year, whether it's beginning of the season, even middle of the season, coming back from the All-Star break, I'm like, yes, let's get hyped. So awesome work.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's also, I'm sure, a lot easier to make hype videos of Aaron Judge, Giancarlo Stanton, Gleyber Torres than it would be if you were like the Pittsburgh Pirates and you're like, I don't know, Brian Reynolds, is he hype enough?
Man, I feel that 100%. Like, I do sometimes, you know, thank my lucky stars that I do work for the Yankees, because there's not that many teams where you'd be like, okay, I get to go into work and I get to like you know, use all of this footage, and there's so much footage that I can do multiple videos with it and go different directions or whatever. Like, you know, one of the most annoying things, I loved the 2019 team, the Next Man Up team. That's mm-hmm. one of my favorites that I've been, you know, working here for. And I gotta say, it was probably the most annoying season to work, because you can't have these guys, you know, playing if they're in, you know, playing on the screen if they're not there. So like, we had like 60 guys, and for long stretches of time. So like, we would have Kendrys Morales and thinking the RDH for a bit. We would have, like, you know, our third string catcher, who, you know, whoever that may be at the time. That was Higgy, I think. Higgy was there for a while, and Higgy starts having some moments. So you put Higgy in there, and then as soon as you put him in, then you got to take him out because Gary's coming back, or, you know, you got whoever was playing short. I don't even remember. But then Didi comes back, and now you got to take him out. So I could not imagine loving my job as much as I do if I worked for a team where that was the norm, where that would be happening all the time, you know. But that actually was my favorite video that I've ever done, was the Next Man Up video. But I think, you know, that was something that we actually were working on that for 5 months. That was a conversation that we had in May, and then we were like, okay, Jesse, if we keep winning, we're gonna have to have all these clips. So we were like bookmarking it and like going throughout the season and putting it on a timeline or whatever. But you know, regardless of the Next Man Up video, that was definitely an annoying season.
Did you go into 2020 like, oh God, we're going to have to do this again? Like, guys are going to be taking days off. We're going to be calling people up. And it's like, are we going to have the same injury problems that we had last year? I'm going to have to make like 4,000 different videos for the same team.
Honestly, I didn't think that. I was like, okay, we have put this behind us. We're going to be good. But then we had COVID. So that was annoying, you know, in its own right. But going into 2020, before we got shut down, was actually, we were riding like pretty high, because we had just locked down Method Man for the Squad Up video. And that was what we were going to run in 2020. Mm-hmm. So we had to kind of like alter things up a little bit for that. But, you know, I was actually, personally, I just came off a Best Editor Emmy nomination. I didn't win, but it was like the coolest thing that ever happened to me, just like getting nominated for that. Mm-hmm. And like our department got like 8 nominations that year, and we were like, you know, we were feeling good about ourselves, and then all of a sudden COVID happened, kind of like screeched it to a halt.
Well, you are a 2-time Emmy Award winner, is that correct?
That is certainly correct. Thank you.
You're so nice welcome. I had to throw that in there.
That's a nice thing to break out at a party. Like, yeah, by the way, like those Emmys, yeah, I got 2 of them. Two times. What about it?
Yes, and I mean, obviously this offseason has been a little challenging, because we don't really know what the makeup of the Yankees team is going to be. There's still a lot of holes in place. There's the lockout. Who knows when the season's going to start? I was just telling James, I usually go down for spring training, and I'm going, but what's going to happen? You know, really nothing. So, you know, I typically try and go down for that, but with like kind of the makeup being so questionable at this point, it's going to be, I mean, when are you going to be able to start like actually making videos? Like, it's going to be a while.
It's tough. It's tough to say, because we are 100% going full throttle. Like, we're, you know, we're planning on everything still happening as it should. And we're going to have a really different team, I assume, but we do have a lot of core guys there. So we can, you know, maybe go overboard on Judge and Stanton and Garrett Cole or Glaber or whatever, knowing that, you know, at the very worst, we'll just have extra of our best players. And at the least, we'd be able to replace them as soon as, you know, they go play on the road or something like that. But other than that, we're basically still operating as if we're going to be doing the same thing. We actually just had a meeting about our opening day video, and we're pretty excited about that for sure.
Awesome.
That gives me hope. That gives me a lot of hope.
Yeah.
It does.
I mean, in production, you really can't speculate, because whenever they do make the call, they're going to want it immediately. They're going to just expect the executives or whatever. They're just going to call us. They're going to be like, hey, hit the edit button. Okay, we'll see it in five, you know, we'll see it in an hour.
Yeah, it's going to be the fastest like month of all time.
Done, you know what I mean? 100%. So they a lot of times people don't, you know, appreciate how much time actually goes into it. So especially from like the higher ups, they'll be like, oh yeah, can we have this by next 30 minutes?
Like, no. Excuse me, I've won 2 Emmys. I need to take my time with this.
You cannot rush perfection.
Now, obviously, we know that, you know, people that work for the Yankees also tend to be pretty big fans in general. Mm-hmm. Who was your favorite player, either growing up or even right now? Because, I mean, I'm sure you could still have a favorite player now.
Yeah. So when I was growing up, as far as the Yankees goes, my favorite player was probably Gary Sheffield. CeCe was my favorite player, you know, while he was here and I was here. But Stan is my favorite player, and I'll tell you why. I actually went to high school with him, and he is my boy, and I'm, you know, good friends with his manager and his agent. They also went to high school with me. So like whenever the season's going on, you know, especially early in the year, you know, there will be a rain delay or whatever. And then, you know, his boy Shane and his agent Brittany will be just coming over to the control room, just be hanging out, shooting the shit, catching up or whatever. But yeah, G is my guy.
Huh. That's awesome. That's that little bit of extra info that we love from the behind the scenes people.
It's funny too, because like that's not really like common knowledge, and it's so like the odds of something like that happening is like so low that like,
yeah,
I feel like I should talk about it, but at the same time, like, it's not even that weird for me.
Yeah, you
know what I mean? In a type of way, like, it's not something where like I need to everybody to know that, oh, it's like John Carlson and I were friends, like, you know, yeah, what I mean? Like shit like that. And it seems weird if I were to have to say that all the time. But yeah, it is like, it's pretty sweet. I always tell him, like, him and I are the only ones who made it to the majors. We played baseball together.
I'll tell you what, when that next hype video comes out, I'm going to be counting how many times Giancarlo Stanton has appeared in it. Now I'm going to know whatever the inside track.
So I actually, it's funny that you say that, because I actually do my best to make it so that he is always like either 1A or 1B in the edits, because, and I always put not just the big moments, but also like the moments that should be bigger if it wasn't him. You know what I mean? Like, if it wasn't Stanton, like, for whatever reason, people treat him like A-Rod, and he is like the furthest possible A-Rod as possible. Like, he cannot be any less like A-Rod other than the fact that the Marlins paid him a lot of money. That's literally the only thing that's the same. And so I feel like I do my best to kind of like go to bat for him and do whatever I can. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you have to. And that's, you know, one of my major complaints with the Yankees fandom is that a lot of times when you do get that superstar, and then, you know, you see the highlights on ESPN of Giancarlo Stanton in Miami, he goes on a 2-week stretch where he hits, you know, 10 home runs, and you think, well, that's what it's going to be like every day when we get him. And I was like, well, hold on a second. Baseball's kind of a difficult game. Not that easy to play. So you have to take those 2-week stretches with the stretches where, you know what, he just doesn't have it this week. It's just not there.
Right. Exactly. And the thing is, you know, one thing about him is that he does have a very awkward looking stance. So when he doesn't hit the ball, it doesn't look good.
Yeah. All of a sudden, every JV baseball player is coming out like, I know how to fix Giancarlo Stanton.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Meanwhile, he hits the ball harder than anybody in the history of the sport. But yeah, you're the one who's right.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Coach Bob.
Right.
I mean,
drop down a butt.
You definitely see so many people just hating on Giancarlo Stanton. And the biggest thing that impressed me this year is just how he basically carried the team down the stretch. I mean, so he was, he was on fire. Like, and I know they kept saying, oh, he's on fire. And then he stopped hitting home runs. They're like, you know, we're not going to talk about it as much. But even in the wild card game, he was literally the only piece of offense that they had. Yeah. And like, they weren't in Fenway. That first hit would have been a home run. Like, you know, it's just.
Exactly. And you would think like Eovaldi is the type of guy where if he gets on a roll, then he's very hard because then he starts messing with your timing. And then he starts hitting you with the, you know, working backward in the count and starts throwing the splitter when you should be expecting a fastball and all this stuff. So like in that situation, you come in and you just knock him and just hit him in the mouth. The whole game is differently. And then it's like, you know, in the ALDS, we play the Rays. We didn't play the Rays that badly during the season. You know what I mean? Like, we lost one series, and it was the last series after the beginning of May. Like, we actually beat them more than they beat us. So, and they're, you know, in the playoffs, they're like the A's.
Yeah,
they're good in the regular season.
That's that bullpen approach. That by the end of the season, these guys got to be gassed.
They're gassed, 100%. It's one of the things that I always like. One of the like hills that I die on Yankees Twitter for sure is that people saying that like they expect to have won a championship, right? But baseball is so hard. A and B, it's like it's such a game of like if one thing happens, then something else probably going to happen type of deal, right? So like if you think about fucking Brusso, Brasso. Whatever. I already forgot his name.
Yep.
Like
Brusso. Yes. I think that's how you pronounce it.
If Chapman doesn't, you know, let the ball slip out of his hand and almost hit him and then, you know, spark the rage of 1,000 fires in this like career minor leaguer, and then he doesn't have the best at bat of his life and hit a home run against us, then we probably win that game. And then we play the Astros, who were not that good in 2020. And then we play the friggin' Dodgers. You know what I mean? We could beat the Dodgers. Like that, it's like literally one thing would have led to that. And then 2019, you know, the game two, when we just did not get a single call in Houston. You remember that? Like,
oh yeah.
My God.
Yes. Off the plate.
Oh yeah, I remember.
That game. And so many like scoring opportunities just wasted by like a low strike three call, or like, you know, Guardy would be up 3-0 and instead of walking, you know, he gets the strike call and then he has to do a double play. Something crazy like that. And then in 2018, fucking Gary Sanchez almost had to walk off grand slam in game four. Like all these little things. Mm-hmm. Didi almost took the home run to give us the lead against Garrett Cole when Cole did not have it that game.
You know what I mean?
Like all these little things would have led to so much. Even in 2017, when we were playing in Houston, and Frazier hit one off the wall, that was like this far away from being a home run. Like, we would have won the series. You know what I mean? So it's like all these just like little things, and
it really
we just haven't gotten it. We just haven't gotten that luck.
It's funny that you mentioned Brusso. So I was actually watching that game. I remember I texted James. I was watching that game in Boston in my friend's house, who is a huge Red Sox fan. And like, we were just kind of hanging out with my boyfriend and a bunch of his college friends, and they're all Red Sox fans. So they were all out at like the bonfire in the back, and I was lying on the couch and I'm like, I can't watch. Like, I want to watch, but I can't watch. And you know, my boyfriend came in, he's like, are you okay? I'm like, please go away. I don't want to talk to you. And then, you know, as soon as that home run was hit, I just started crying and nobody knew what to do with me. I was like, don't worry, I'll get over it. Just, you know,
you won't though.
Yeah,
I won't get over it anytime soon. The wound is still too fresh.
We're still talking about it. It's still fresh.
Oh my God. You know, that definitely hurt like so much because it was like we won that game, it felt like. You know what I mean? Like, we won that game. And then to just kind of have it just snatched. It was like the ninth inning didn't even have to happen at that point. But in 2019, very similar story. For game six, I just because of the way that the schedule was, and I think there was a rain out or something like that, there ended up being no travel day in between game five and game six. So somebody, I think somebody who was on the crew had to end up going to Houston, and the other person could not work that day. So I had to work. And normally it's a two-man thing. Like one of us does the game preview and one of us does the recap. Normally I do the preview, they do the recaps. And so I ended up having to be there by myself. And I'm talking about, when I'm telling you that I was there by myself, it was a Saturday night. There was zero people in the entire stadium. Normally there's security guards, but there was nobody there except me. And all the lights were off and everything like that. And I was just watching, and I just didn't think we were going to win. Like, I was so angry, because that was the same game that Judge got doubled off first because of fucking Michael Brantley, who always gets lifted. Yeah. And he always gets lifted by, you know, for defensive replacement. And you're like, this guy really just did that to us, and, you know, doubled off Judge, who's normally a great base runner. Always. So it's just how it felt like we lost. And then DJ has that at bat. He goes the other way. I was like, no fucking way. I get up. It clears the wall, like barely gets over Springer's glove. And I was just running around the control room, like by myself, yelling, literally yelling at the top of my head. I was like, yeah, let's go. And I like ran to the end of the wall. And I like jumped into the wall and then like ran back to my desk. And I was like texting everybody or whatever. And by the time I was like, oh shit, I need to work now, we lost.
That's a rough one.
Literally, like, it was like that, you know what I mean? And you just never forget those types of heartbreaks. And I just want to have that go the other way just once.
Oh yeah, that was 2017. The 2017 ALCS was that for me. That was game seven. I had just the worst night of my life that night. I went all the way into the city. I was hanging out with people I didn't want to be hanging out with. I was watching the game. CC gets hit a little bit early. We never get any offense going. And I'm just sitting there for like nine innings, just watching them lose and watching them not score with runners in scoring position. Seeing like, this is the lowest moment of my life.
Yeah.
This right here. I will never be lower than this.
That was tough because we were like you said, we just weren't doing anything.
It was such a special season too. It had title written all over it. Underdog. Yeah. Like that. When are the Yankees the underdog?
Never. And haven't been since.
Yeah.
No, it's James and I talked about this earlier, and I feel like I have to mention this story, but so many Yankees moments just serve as core memories for me. You know, it's like you know when certain things happen and you're like, I remember exactly where I was, exactly what I was doing.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna share this with you. This is a big one.
It's criminal that she's never shared this on the podcast before. This is the first time it's gonna be heard on the podcast, and it's criminal.
Yes, yes. So I'll share the less important one first, though. In 2017, when the Yankees played in the wild card game to get in, and then they were gonna play the Indians. I was like, I didn't have a TV in my apartment. I had like a little crappy, like old TV. And I was like, Yankees win this game, I'm buying a TV. I'm buying a big, big fancy TV. They won. And I was like, I'm not going to buy yet, because what if they lose the next series? And then they lost the first three games, or as the first two games against the Indians. And I'm like, I'm not buying a new TV. And then Greg Bird hit his home run. I'm like, I think I'm going to buy a new TV. And I did, and they just kept winning, and it was the best thing in the world. So I have my TV downstairs. It's my Yankees TV. It's special. But when it comes to core moments, there was this one game. I'm not sure if you remember it, but the Yankees and the Red Sox were playing, and James, it was a joke. Relax.
I know. Yankees and Red Sox were playing.
Yeah. Yankees and Red Sox were playing, and there just happened to be a brawl. Of course, that happens occasionally. But it was the one where Pedro Martinez threw Don Zimmer to the ground. Now, you know, when I was a kid, my sister and I used to watch games all the time. Anytime the TV was on, it had to be on the Yankee game. That's kind of how I became a fan. So we're watching it. My mom runs into the room and she's like, "You can't be here. Get out. Get out." And she let us leave. Like, she made us leave. because she was low. Like, it was just such a traumatizing situation. So I'm crying. Man. My sister's crying. We're being, you know, pushed out of the room. And my mom, like, forever, I keep telling her, I'm like, Mom, remember that one time that you, like, wouldn't let us watch the brawl? And she's like, it was terrible. I don't know why you wanted to watch it. So that is a core moment. Anytime they fight in baseball, I get real scared. So that is one of the moments.
Man, that's hilarious. That is hilarious.
It's one of those places I'm like, I remember exactly what I was feeling, what I was doing. And it just so happened to be when Pedro Martinez threw Don Zimmer to the ground.
I remember where I was at when that happened too, 100%. I was watching it in my parents' bedroom. They were watching it, and I was like on the ground watching it with them. And I was like, oh, Don Zimmer just got thrown.
See, a little bit calmer than me, but you know, that's fine. It's also like those moments where
that big baby who just rolled around.
It's also like those moments where, like, you know, the Yankees lost in 2001, you know, worst moment of my life. I wore black for an entire week at school to mourn it. But like, they played on SportsCenter for some reason, the song Wherever You Will Go by The Calling. Can't listen to it anymore.
Bad memories.
I was crying in the corner. Wow. Like, it was bad. Wow. I remember things.
What I do for a lot of the like heartbreaking moments is that I cannot watch replays, cannot watch highlights or whatever. It just brings me right back to that place. So I just compartmentalize it. You know, probably the worst experience as a fan of any sport, and Allie, you can definitely you can sympathize with me on this, was the Tony Romo drop snap. I have never been so dejected in my entire life. I was so angry, and one of my friends was there. I was this was 06, so I was a junior in high school, and one of my closest friends was there, and then my best friend was there, and he's a Seahawks fan, so we was kind of like just going back and forth, and the outsider was just stoking the flames. Whenever something happened, somebody would get mad and he would be laughing at them, and then somebody would get mad and he'd be laughing at me, and then, you know, he was just basically just like instigating. And when that happened, he made it like a billion times worse. Ugh. So much worse. I don't think we had a remote that wasn't broken in the entire house.
I had a roommate like that in college. I had two of them. The year that the Seahawks and the Patriots played each other in the Super Bowl, I had one roommate who was a big Patriots fan and also like very smug about it, and one who was a Seahawks fan who was like die hard, like every game start to finish, rewatch it, watch the plays, break it down. And when Malcolm Butler came up with that interception, the entire room just went completely silent. We were like, oh, it's going down now.
Yeah, I was inconsolable, bro.
I mean, I guess the one thing we can agree on is that Yankees and Cowboys just
don't break your heart.
Emotional damage, heartbreak. It's just,
yes.
I don't know why I chose them. I did. The Yankees kind of chose me. I kind of chose the Cowboys. And of course, I started watching in whenever that year that Tony Romo did that. And I'm like, are you kidding me? What did I do?
No. See, I had like, by the time I was 6 years old, I had three Super Bowls. And I was like, this is awesome. We're never going to lose again. Little did I know. My dad.
The drought was coming.
My dad set me up for failure. Now, like, when I watch Cowboy games with my dad, like, he's basically just like, he's so out of it. Like, the one thing that I want to do is I want to watch, you know, I want to see a Cowboys Super Bowl just so that I could watch it with my dad. But I'm not going to lie, he's so cynical about them. I'm like, are we even going to make it to that point? Like, he starts to give up on the game as soon as we don't have the lead. He's like, this is Jerry Jones' fault. My dad, this is what my dad talks. he's from the hood in Houston. So like, he's got that like southern thing. He's like, man, I hate Jerry Jones.
I'm definitely
talking about why Stephen A. Smith is right, why everybody who hates the Cowboys is right. I'm like, man, are you a fan or not?
Honestly, I started making fun of the Cowboys this year, like before the playoffs even started. I was like, they're going to lose in the first round. They just do that. And I was like, you know what? If I set myself up for disappointment and they succeed, I love it. It's great.
Exactly.
But man, I can never set myself up for disappointment quite enough for the New York Yankees. I just always think they're going to win. And it's been a hard few more so years. And Brett Gardner is the only current Yankee. Well, not even anymore, but if he signs,
you think he's coming back?
I mean, I want him to come back, but who knows? Maybe you'll be making his retirement video.
I want him to come back too.
I wouldn't hate that at all.
I don't know if he will or not, but I think that you can do much worse for a fifth outfielder.
The thing is, if Brett Gardner comes back, that's like guaranteeing that we're going to have at least two outfield injuries, because he's going to play 150 games. He just is.
Right. One way or another, he'll get in.
He always gets to 150. I think we looked it up like a couple weeks ago, and like,
yeah,
he's had like one season where he played less than 140 games.
It's amazing. Yeah.
Well, I mean,
it's
the thing
truly
is that
amazing.
You need somebody like that. You do. You really do.
It's got value.
He really does. And the thing is, like, everyone wants to get mad at him. Like, what? It's not his fault. He's supposed to be like our platoon outfielder.
Yeah.
Pinch runner maybe sometimes, but like, he's not supposed to be all this. It's not his fault that nobody else can stay healthy.
Yeah.
Listen,
and at
he's
the very least, you're always
going to
get defense.
Here.
Always going to get defense.
Right. And he plays good defense. He has, his arm is getting a little al dente, but other than that, I mean, he still covers a little.
Al dente. That's a lovely way to describe it. That's good.
That's
good,
the only way I'm going to describe it from now on. Anytime I see someone with a noodle arm, I'm calling it al dente.
You know how they have Paul O'Neill when it's like throws right, kicks left. You got to have Brett Gardner throws al dente.
You got to work that play into the video too. It's a must. It's a must.
Throws L.
Well, Nick, thank you so much for coming on and chatting with us. We're going to be looking forward to the hype videos and seeing what comes next. And I'm sure when Brett Gardner does retire, you're going to make his retirement video, which we'd love to see. Make
and
me
Allison's
cry.
Going to cry. Yep.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
You already know.
It's not that hard, but, but thanks so much for coming on. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, man. We'll have you back again for sure. This was a lot of commiserating with the Yankees failures. I wasn't expecting that, but I quite enjoyed it.
Oh yeah, hopefully next time we'll have some good stuff to talk about.
Yeah. Well, hopefully baseball will be back. Thanks again so much, man.
No problem, man. Thanks for having me.